Welcome to Rob's Reliability Project, a podcast for reliability and maintenance people to learn, improve, and better themselves at work and at home. Here's your host, Rob Kalvaroski.
All right. How's everyone doing? Welcome to Rob's Reliability Project. This week on Rob's Reliability Project, we have on George Williams and Joe Anderson from the Asset Management Group at B. Braun Medical. Both of them are certified reliability leader, and not only are they CRLs, they are CRL level black belts, two out of two in the world. And not only that, they've implemented great culture change initiatives over their careers. We talk about what's wrong with the reliability industry, what we can do better, and the alignment of our companies between their vision, the goals, and their actions. I mentioned a statistic in the podcast incorrectly. We were talking about disengaged employees, and I said that it costs the United States $500 billion per year. The actual number is $150 billion per year, and I corrected it in post-production. As for disengaged employees, it's a significant problem. And as leaders, we need to work on engaging our people, not only in reliability and asset management initiatives, but in their jobs overall. Finally, I've heard some complaints about listening on Anchor. The podcast is available on 10 different platforms. I continue to post the Anchor link on LinkedIn, on Facebook, and on other social media because it has the links for 8 of the 9 other platforms. So if you look right under the Anchor logo above where you're playing the podcast, you can click to play on other platforms. You know, one of the sites that has a better platform to play it on, at least on a laptop or computer, is Stitcher. But if you're playing it off your phone or an iPod, iTunes or Google Podcasts is probably your best bet. If you're on iTunes, search for Rob's Reliability Project and it'll pop up. Or you can ask me on LinkedIn and I will send you the link. Finally, if the podcast is too long for you, I know some of them are around 45 minutes to an hour. I am chopping it up and bringing you Rob's Reliability Tip of the Day. It's also available on 10 different platforms, including Amazon Alexa and Google Podcasts. So on Amazon Alexa, it's a flash briefing. Go to your local Amazon store. It's available in Canada, the United States, Australia, the UK, and India. Well, obviously, it's only available in English. Or you can play it off your phone on Google Podcasts. Or again, it's available on 10 different platforms. If you need any links for that, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn and I will give it to you. Those tips are around 1 minute in length. They're available 7 days a week, and they're typically cut from an interview that we're having from the podcast that week. So if you don't want to listen to a 45-minute podcast, get up while you're brushing your teeth, use Amazon Alexa, use Google Podcasts, or use whatever you want, and get a 1 minute reliability tip of the day. Subscribe to the podcast. Let other people know about the podcast. If you work with anyone in reliability or maintenance who would enjoy the podcast. And I hope you guys enjoy this week. Here's the interview with George Williams and Joe Anderson. Hey guys, here with George Williams and Joe Anderson. So if you don't know these guys, they're both culture change experts. George and Joe both work at B. Braun Medical now. George Williams used to work at Bristol Myers Squibb, and Joe used to work at the Schwann Food Company and J.M. Smucker. Both of you guys are CRL black belts. Does either of you want to break down the process of how you become a CRL black belt?
Yeah, sure. Hey, Rob. Thanks for having us on. We really appreciate the you spending some time with us and inviting us to your podcast. So the CRL black belt process really starts with obtaining your CRL. And then once you've obtained the CRL certification, at that point, you can then take a couple of projects associated with each of the domains. So you're required to do at least one project for each of the knowledge domains within the CRL. And that project really is about a 90-day project. It's not necessarily extensive, but has to provide value. You are required to get your manager's signature. You're required to get finance's signature on either cost savings or benefit back to the company. And you execute against that project. And so once you achieve completion of a project in each of the knowledge domains, then you are eligible for your CRL black belt. You then submit all that paperwork back to the folks at Reliability Web and RLI, and they do a review of the paperwork and hopefully you get approved.
Yeah. And so everybody, just so you know, CRL stands for Certified Reliability Leader. It's run by the Association of Maintenance Professionals. George and Joe are, I think you're two out of the three in the world.
Who's the third?
Maybe it's just you two.
to my knowledge, it's just us two.
I've only seen the two awarded, but there certainly could be many more. I'm just not aware of them.
Yeah, so then you guys are the two in the world. So first, congrats. Thanks for coming on. So let's dive right in. So I saw you guys give a keynote at the Reliability Conference this year called It's Not You, But It's You. And I guess the concept was, you know, reliability leaders taking ownership of their own, you know, process. Do you want to break down what It's Not You, But It's You is about?
Well, first off, I think given the experience that George and I have in the industry, you see a lot of times that we like to place blame. And I think the talk came out of the fact that blame doesn't get you anywhere. It doesn't lead to success. So we wanted to bring up the fact that, and it's not popular to talk about, but we like to blame others for our lack of success, not understanding the obstacles that are in our path. So we wanted to bring to light the fact that, you know, there's ways around obstacles, whether it's, you know, it's through it, under it, around it. It doesn't matter. The point is ultimately you're the one that's accountable for your own success. So, you know, kind of is what it is at that point.
So we've gone to a number of conferences over the course of our career. And I think that when you go to these conferences, there are folks you see on a very regular basis. There are folks that are kind of new, and the recurring theme for the folks that are new is that they're pushing a boulder uphill. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. And a lot of us have had to do that in our career. The folks that are persistent, the folks that, irrespective of what is in front of them in terms of challenges, irrespective of the bosses they happen to have at that time or the leadership that's in place at their organization, the folks that see success because of themselves. And the folks that are not seeing success are not seeing success because of themselves. To place blame on obstacles in your way or the situation that you happen to be in is really not an excuse for success. You can achieve, you've just not figured out how to either talk to your boss appropriately or convince him of the fact that asset management is the right path for the organization. There are reasons why you're not successful. And the point in time at which you accept the fact that that success relies on you is a turning point. It is a tipping point. And I think from my perspective, what I would like people to understand is that the technologies have existed for a long time. The approach, the practices, all those things are available in books and you can read them all day long. But until you self-reflect and until you look at success holistically and realize that the success of your organization relies on your ability to either promote asset management or not.
And I think that's why we use Paul Crocker as an example. I mean, he's one of those that, one, he's a government utility, so the challenges there alone are hard enough. And then being basically the sole champion at that point where he was in his career, and being able to overcome and do all the things that he's done, he's a prime example of exactly what we're talking about on the success side. So it was a fun time being able to honor him, but also letting people know that he is one of those that we're talking about, that you can overcome those obstacles and be successful.
Yeah, it definitely resonates with me. I'm excited to talk to Paul about that, you know, coming up, but I really see it a lot in, I know that in my previous job at Tech, we talked about it a lot when, with respect to the CMMS, where you hear, you know, garbage in, garbage out. And I think a lot of it is laziness. I mean, to be frank, how do you perceive it?
I think you hit the nail on the head in a lot of aspects, but I think a lot of it is a lack of knowledge, and a lack of knowledge drives fear. So people don't want to move, or they're paralyzed because of the lack of understanding. And it's not a bad thing. It's just the fact that they don't know, and they see people like us get up in front of a crowd and talk about it. And it's a lot easier to get up there and talk about it than it is to actually execute. So I think it paralyzes people, the fear, but those people that overcome are the ones that become successful. And the only way to do it is to just do it without fear of failure. You're going to fail, and you've got to be able to learn from it. I mean, the greatest thing is that you fell forward and not backward. Yeah, so that's kind of the key.
So how do you get over the mental hump to get going? Like, it's almost like, I like it to thinking like, you know, you want to run that marathon, but you're still watching TV on the couch. And if you don't get up and go train, you're never going to be able to run the marathon. How do you start? Where do you start?
I think there's two aspects of that. I think first and foremost, you have to have a sound fundamental understanding of asset management. And so that takes an awful lot of reading, an awful lot of essentially training, like you're saying, right? You got to prepare yourself. I think the other aspect of that is on the asset management side of the fence, and in the maintenance and reliability side of the fence, we continually fall short of attaching ourselves to business outcomes. And we don't understand that the function of our equipment and its ability to perform that function impacts all aspects of our organization. And so if you go to the, you know, www.aboutus.com for any organization, there's going to be some fundamental pieces that exist. We've got to supply our customers a high quality product. We've got to make money. We've got a commitment to our employees. We got a commitment to safety. We got a commitment to the environment. And we've got a potentially, depending on the company, a commitment to the community. And all companies have essentially the same goals and objectives. They're all there to make money, high quality product, service, everything I just mentioned. But on the maintenance side of the fence, we tend to try to tie everything to the individualized asset and its cost to the organization, which is a minuscule piece of what the impact of that asset is. You are, you know, highly more likely to have an incident, you know, in a reactive work order than you are from a safety perspective on a proactive work order. And the cost of downtime is significant, and the cost of a repair versus doing a predictive maintenance task is considerable. So I think there's a fundamental flaw in the asset management community to tie your expectations to the actual business outcomes of the organization.
And I'd agree with George there. And I think if you followed anything that I've done, I've spent a lot of time explaining the business side of what we do to give people the fundamental understanding of how it all ties to the business. It isn't just that we mitigated a failure. There's a cost savings associated with it. We gain more throughput. The organization is doing better. There's all these other things that tie to it, and understanding how to sell your value proposition and tied to those assets. You know, you got to capture value, and you've got to show value through cost savings, cost avoidance, whatever it is, and be able to sell that to the organization. And I think that's a big gap that we have on the maintenance side. And I think it's a couple of reasons, right? One is, you know, most maintenance supervision has been promoted because they were the best reactive maintenance mechanic there was on the floor. But we've done nothing to invest in them as a company to develop them as leaders. We just said, hey, you're really good on this piece of equipment. We want you to lead other people. And, you know, in my history, I've been time and time again, 7-8 times in different companies, and I've seen the same thing. We take the best, what we think is the best mechanic, and we promote him to supervisor, or we promote him to maintenance manager, and we expect him to know. But he was a mechanic, and we've done nothing to invest in these people to bridge the gap between how to communicate what we're doing to the business side of things. And if you can relate it to the business, it's an easier sell.
So when you're saying it's an easier sell, who are we selling to?
You're selling to executive management, whether it's plant management or above. You got to sell the value of maintenance, reliability, asset management, and operational reliability as well, and understanding, you know, the ties to the business. Because you're developing two aspects, right? You're developing the people side, and you're also developing the equipment side, which is a two-prong approach to true holistic reliability. I think a lot of times we only focus on equipment from a reliability perspective. We also, and this is my opinion, but the mistake that we make is we tie maintenance and reliability together. When maintenance is a piece of reliability, it's only one small piece, statistically about 13%, where we're not looking at it holistically. What is operations doing to maintain their equipment? What is, you know, engineering doing, you know, at the design phase to give us good equipment? You know, engineering is known for dumping off a piece of equipment that doesn't work, and now maintenance is stuck with it, and now it's maintenance's problem. What's, you know, procurement doing? What is sales and marketing doing? There's all these facets that tie into reliability that have nothing to do with maintenance, but we tie those two terms together. And now when we bring up reliability, everybody thinks it's a maintenance function. So, you know, again, that's my opinion, but I think it's a mistake.
No, it's definitely... well, I mean, you see it everywhere. The maintenance superintendent usually is the boss of the reliability manager. Something I wanted to actually jump on that you said, Joe, was you said that, you know, all these different departments kind of function and the stuff that they do affects reliability. And something that I was at a site a few weeks ago, and one of the young co-op students made a comment and said to me and the room and said, you know, we're all on the same team here. And all the lube specialists at the back had a chuckle because they seem to be fighting with operations. And then they also fight with maintenance because they're not exactly maintenance people. How do you, like, we talk in asset management about alignment. How do we actually get everyone on the same page?
Well, for me, and I'm sure George has input on this as well, but for me, is maintenance is always to blame in a reactive environment. And the reason for that is because we don't understand the losses that are in our system. And breakdowns is only one of the 16 major manufacturing losses that exist. But because maintenance losses are visible, meaning that this piece of equipment went down for 30 minutes, and then we go in the morning meeting and say, well, this piece of equipment is why we didn't hit our numbers. And no one challenges the fact that there's speed losses in the system, there's minor stops in the system, you know, there's all this waste in the system and all these other things because we don't understand it. As a maintenance manager in my past, I've always done my best to expose at least the 6 big losses related to OEE, so that I can get everyone to see that these losses contribute holistically. You're telling me breakdowns is an issue and you want to blame maintenance, but we're 10% on average, we're 10% of plant losses. So if I can expose that, and I do that, we've developed a loss analysis tool where we can expose those things, where minor stops 99.9% of the time are the number one loss in any facility. And minor stops are owned by operations. That's any stop 10 minutes or less in the system, right? So the box jams in the box machine for a minute. We clear the jam and we keep running, but no one records it. And so those things, you know, it happens 60, 70, 80, 90 times in a shift, and you've lost 2 or 3 hours of downtime to box jams. But we're complaining in the morning meeting about the 30-minute breakdown that we had during the same shift and saying we can't hit our numbers. So to me, I expose losses. I get everybody involved and get them to understand holistically where all their losses are so that we're, as a team, we go to eliminate those losses to increase throughput, you know, reduce safety and quality incidents and hit our numbers. And it seemed to work for me everywhere else I've gone.
Yeah. And just to add to that, I mean, it's all about data and giving a proper understanding of what the goals are of the organization. As Joe mentioned, a failure is very visible to the organization. The line is completely down and it's down for, you know, longer than 10 minutes. Let's say it's down for 2 hours. It's significant to the organization from a visibility standpoint. Meanwhile, all the minor stops are adding up to 6 hours a shift or per day. And so the folks are visible to the individualized event. Meanwhile, they are blind to the significant losses that are occurring on a very repetitive basis day in and day out. And so the role of asset management is really to put together, you know, not only the strategy to improve in terms of asset management and reliability, but to really educate and provide a level of understanding to those around them in order to be able to get that buy-in. And, the basis of your question was, how do you get folks involved and how do you get folks to buy in? And I think the way you get folks to buy in is to convince them it's the right thing to do. It's no different than you know, if you're setting your objectives for the year, you've got to convince your organization that the things that you need to work on are the right things to do. And to do that, you've got to provide a level of understanding and you back that with information and data.
And I think it's a lot easier to sell when you go after quick wins and low hanging fruit. So you expose a loss that's been nagging operations for so long that it's become a part of the picture and they just think no one's ever going to address the issue. And you bring those issues up and you put them to rest and you start to see the headaches start to go away and you'll get more and more people on your side. I think the goal is to find, you know, that roughly 10% that wants change. It's 10 to 20%, but we'll be conservative. The 10% that want change, and you get those quick wins so that you can get the 60% that are sitting on the fence undecided, you can get them on your side. And once you have, you know, 70 to 80% of the group, the other 20% doesn't matter. The goal is to focus on the 80%. And those 20% will improve just through the changes that are being made. But the 80% are going to be the ones that drive the change.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I definitely really like the data-driven process. I really like starting with quick wins. I think that that's something that, you know, people on the floor, like whether that's operators or maintenance, they're really going to like you if you start with stuff that bothers them. Now, we'll switch gears a little bit. So let's say you guys were dropped into a new plant today and as far as you know, you're dealing with a reactive culture. How do you sell to people what the end goal looks like and what the vision of reliability is?
So I think I heard a couple of different questions there, Rob. So one was around culture, the other one was around, you know, selling the vision. So I guess let me address one and then the other and then talk about how they're kind of combined. So from a vision perspective, you've got to have a really good understanding of what the organization's objectives are. Asset management as a whole is a great practice, and we would all love to achieve 100% of the inherent reliability of our equipment. But it doesn't always make sense to do so. In some cases, there are lines that we are running that we only need 50% of the time of because the product is either outdated or it's phasing out, or the equipment is at end of life and we expect to replace it in 3 years. So should we really do as much maintenance on it as we were doing in the past? And so there are justifiable reasons to not necessarily focus in certain areas. And I think the vision piece of this and the asset management strategy piece of this has to focus on what is right for the organization. And to do that, you've got to understand the organization. You've got to understand it from a context perspective. You've got to understand it from where they're going, from what they're investing in, from what the future looks like before you can set your vision. And then if those things align, I think it's a lot easier to get senior leadership on board because you're essentially talking the same language that they've already approved. From a culture perspective, once you've set that vision, you've now got to get folks to march in that order. And I think, you know, culture is a whole different topic of conversation that certainly I want to talk about. But the initial look at culture and what has to happen in order for you to achieve your goals really stems from getting folks to have a goal. Folks don't show up to work to do a poor job. But typically when faced with equipment that is down, they have to make a choice. They either band-aid it or they fix it right the first time. And what differentiates the two approaches is really that vision and the actions and behaviors of management associated with that vision. So if the vision says fix it right the first time, but management is saying get it up and running, get it up and running, get it up and running, well, we're going to band-aid it. So the integrity between the vision and senior leadership will evolve culture, if that makes sense.
I think a piece to add to that as well is when you set vision, mission, values, and goals, you're giving people direction. And people want a sense of direction. They want to understand, where are we going? Where are you taking us? You know, people want to be led. You know, whether they admit it or not, they want to be led, and they're looking at leadership going, what's next? Where do we want to go? You know, and by setting those things and, like George said, with integrity, driving those things, you get people on board.
And I think that to set a systems loop to that and a backfeed to that, you talked about folks, you know, really wanting to achieve against that vision and. You know, the organization and culture evolves based on the behaviors of senior leadership. And so, you know, if you know, you talk about data, and I think in some of the pre-work that you sent, crap in, crap out, and it's the same thing here. If you set a vision and expectation, but you're not living to it, you're not setting an example to it, then it's not going to evolve and you're going to be pushing a boulder uphill.
Well, we see hypocrites every day, right? We don't like to follow them
in the industry.
Yeah, in the industry.
Sure. No, I couldn't agree more about, like, I guess the next question would be, do you often see companies that have the alignment between their actions and their vision?
Very few.
Yeah, that's
unfortunately, I think very few. I think, and you know, I'm saying this in jest because I certainly haven't talked to 1,000 companies. I'm not a consultant who's talked to millions of organizations. Mm-hmm. I do teach at the University of Wisconsin, and so I interact with an awful lot of students there. I also, you know, go to a lot of conferences, so I have a lot of folks that I speak to there. But in terms of what my experience has been based on those experiences. Yeah, no, we're not. We're doing a very poor job industrial wide.
And I'd agree with that. I think my background is a little more extensive as far as switching companies and things like that. And I've seen it and lived it. They need help as well. I think senior leadership needs help because they're overwhelmed. You know, so 99.9% of, at least in the United States, manufacturing companies, you know, they don't have a clue and they don't understand. So they're just going off of what they know, and what they know isn't always the right direction. And, you know, they need help. And I think they get in, they think they can do it, but you get overwhelmed really quick.
Most people in this industry that run asset management have come up from a technician.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of folks that I can point to who have been formally trained from a business and engineering perspective in the role of operating asset management.
Yeah.
And so you are at a table full of people with business degrees and with very specific schooling in the areas at which they are managing.
Yeah.
You are the runt of the litter. You are the small dog at the bowl. Well, and you're trying to get people to understand your belief system and your approach and what you think is right. But quite frankly, you're probably not looked at with the same level of respect as everybody else at the table.
Yeah, but if we look at some root causes, right? Up until the 80s, plant management were engineers and people that understood the business ties to engineering. And when, you know, investment firms started taking over, you know, capital investment, those types of things, you started seeing the sales folks getting promoted into these executive leadership positions because it was all about the stock price. And I think that's what we focused on today and not what is the long term. Am I in this for the long haul? It's what is the next quarter going to bring? And so that type of mentality is pushed throughout the culture of most of these organizations. What's the stock price going to look like in a quarter? And to be honest, what can you achieve in a quarter?
And that's an interesting concept because you also see leadership at plant levels where organizations have plants, say they have 10 plants. They will purposely switch around GMs every 2-3 years. Yeah. So if you know you're a GM that's only got a 2-year lifespan at a specific plant, you are focused on cutting.
Yep. And then cutting is the wrong way to go. We all know that from case studies. We cut headcount, cut budgets because it knocks the stock price up, but that only lasts for about,
Well, what do you care? You're gone at that point.
Right. So, 3 years. So you look great. Gone in two.
Yeah, exactly.
And so three years later, your plant is in chaos. And now the next guy that comes in, he could be the greatest plant manager of all time. But because everything is faltering beneath him, he's going to look like he's worthless. And then the plant manager that left when everything was good is going, hey, what happened, man? You know, everything was great when I left. And he's the one that destroyed everything. And, you know, this new guy, whether it's a CEO, plant manager, whoever that takes over, you know, he's going to struggle. So
And I think you see that cyclically, like you see that in our industry, even organizations that achieve very high levels of asset management, you know, whatever we want to call that, they always end up coming back down. Like there's not,
I don't
know of a lot of examples. Right. Exactly.
We don't need it anymore.
We don't need that whole organization. Yeah, what do we need that whole organization anymore. For? We're running great. Right. So they cut everything down. And then you go back to being reactive, and then they go, oh, well, we're going to need some reliability here.
So 5 years later, they're bringing back their reliability.
The trouble is it takes you 7 to 10 years to get it where it needs to be, and it takes you 2 years to screw it all up.
Yep. So in summary, it's short-term thinking. Pretty much.
I mean, so like you guys talk about it like it's just manufacturing. Like I come from the mining world, and it's exactly the same there.
My background was R&D and pharmaceuticals. So, you know, I cut my teeth as a maintenance technician in an R&D space in pharmaceuticals. And it was no different there. I mean, you know, the site that I was at, I worked my way up, became a reliability engineer. We won an award for having best maintenance and reliability program. And, you know, a couple of years later, we're back to square one and we're trying to do it again. And then we do it regionally and then we do it globally. And we tried it globally probably 3 times before it actually caught fire. And so, you know, I think I don't necessarily think it's an industry specific item. I think it's a financial management item.
So it's, you know, I can only speak from a manufacturing perspective because that's my background. So that's the reason why I speak about manufacturing, but I'm sure it's rampant throughout the industry.
Yeah, I think it, well, I mean, at least from what I've seen, it's definitely the, like a lot of these senior managers, they're bonused off of the stock price or they're bonused off of, you know, their share plan options or whatever. And so they are really focused on the next 2 years or less. I think it's, you know, it's no different than general managers of like NBA teams. Like, who's really planning for 20 years from now? They're really focused on this season or next season.
Yeah, I think if you read any Deming at all, he's been saying this for 100 years now, and we just can't seem to grasp that. I mean, it's, you know, it's a mess. And, you know, when your CEO changes every 2 years because he made the stock price go up by $3 a share or whatever, you know, and pads his resume to move on to a bigger company, because $1 million a year isn't enough. Now he can make $2 million a year. And we keep nurturing that in this country. We're going to continue to see those problems.
I think the other issue is, from an asset management perspective, you're always trying to put a rocket on a turtle, which means you've got to balance the short-term wins with the long-term wins. In order for you to put together a full, what we would consider to be a sound asset management policy and approach, requires you to do things that don't necessarily return today, like collecting your equipment hierarchy, like doing a criticality analysis. You're trying, those things take time, and those things take money, and those things take patience to get in place for long-term sustainability. And I think a lot of times the recipe for reliability starts with all the things that take way too long to see a result for the organization to buy in. And asset management leaders need to balance, or like I like to term it, put a rocket on a turtle. You've got to balance short-term wins with the long-term asset management sustainability.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, it's the same thing, right? With the marathon, like, you don't start running that marathon tomorrow. You have 6 months, a year, a couple years worth of training before you can get there.
The problem is we want the marathon without the training.
Right. I mean, if you're a funded runner, they don't really care about your training. They want you to go run right away and return a win.
And if you've seen me, the training's gone real well, right? Like, I could go run a marathon right now, but that's exactly where we're at in this industry. It's forget the training. It's too expensive. I want results right now. And the problem is we have underdeveloped people. We're coming out of an education system that doesn't educate people. And then they're thrown out into the workforce. And then we're pulling our hair out, one, to understand why. But most of these organizations aren't investing in their people. And if we want to make a great country with great manufacturing or whatever industry it is, we've got to start investing in people. And, you know, it's going to be our downfall.
So we've spent a lot of time talking about what's wrong.
Yeah.
Let's kind of flip that around and start talking about what we've got to do to make a difference. And, I think that really starts with educating those folks at the ground floor level and giving them a sound fundamental understanding as to, you know, a lot of times we'll give people direction and give them requirements that they have to face, and here you have to do things this way, with zero understanding as to why that's beneficial to the organization. And I think, you know, those pieces of giving people understanding is what we can do as leaders, and that really makes the difference. People will only do so much based on, well, you have to.
Yeah. And we also squash innovation and creativity, because they might have a better way of doing it. But we're stuck in our ways of this work.
And, well, it worked 25 years ago, so we'll just do that. Yeah.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, that, you know, like tying in someone's task to the actual goals of the organization, that's one of the number one ways to engage employees. And really, like, if you look at the statistics, we're like, in the United States alone, you're losing $150 billion a year, just because people go to work and they're just not engaged with their job. It's like a ridiculous statistic.
Yeah, the waste is plentiful, that's for sure. You know, if the Lean Six Sigma black belts would provide value, man, you probably wouldn't see that, but.
I think a lot of the focus ends up, you know, like you had mentioned earlier about losses, it's the trouble is a lot of folks do focus on waste.
Yeah.
And they're not focused on manufacturing.
They're not focused on losses. They're focused on waste.
Right. Yeah. And so they're two different things. They're not focused on manufacturing better or producing more product. They're focused on streamlining the poor practices they have today. And and that is short-term thinking.
I think a lot of people don't want to ask for help either. I think it's a pride issue, and pride comes also from a lack of knowledge.
This will be the last question before we get you guys out of here. So along that line of pride, how often do you think that ego is something that's getting in our way, either as reliability people trying to help an organization or as, you know, as we try to help somebody understand what we're trying to do?
Well, I think it comes back to Einstein, right? Einstein had an equation that it was ego equals I over knowledge, right? So the more I you have, the less knowledge, the more ego, right? But the more knowledge you have, the less I you have, so the less ego. So I think a lot of it, again, it comes back to a lack of knowledge, a lack of understanding. That's where you get the ego, and you won't win an ego battle. It's a testosterone-driven fight when you walk into an office and try to battle a lack of knowledge versus the right thing to do. And you couple that with most maintenance and reliability professionals' inability to communicate, and it just creates chaos.
And I would say, I don't know, I've lived my career with the thought that and this is really true today, because there is a shortage of qualified, skilled people out there. If you are in a position right now where you're stuck battling ego, go to another company.
Yeah, especially in today's economy.
As it keeps
getting better, it's an employee market now, so it's easy to jump ship.
Why push a battle uphill and try to? It depends on where that individual sits, right? I mean, if that person's your immediate boss, I think you can sit down, have some conversations, and hopefully, provide them some knowledge and understanding. But if it's senior leadership, it's a tough battle, and some organizations, the ego gets in the way of their success.
Yep.
And it's not ego for great reasons necessarily. It's ego for the fact of ego, right? Like you said, it's ignorance over knowledge. And so if you are ignorant and don't have the knowledge, then your ego is inflated.
Well, that's what creates inflated ego.
Yep.
Like I said, ego, it generates fear because you're going to be exposed as one that doesn't know. And so you see everybody as a threat. And when you see everybody as a threat, you surround yourself with people that know less than you do, so you can always be superior. And then you create a terrible team that you're surrounded with, but you always look like the good guy because they're your scapegoats, instead of developing a team that's going to make you look good. And I think as leaders, we want people that make us look good. I mean, my job is to make my boss look good and get him promoted. And that's the way I look at it. And
so Rob, I want to have a second session. So this conversation's not, we've kind of gone down a rabbit hole of what's wrong in the industry. And I think, the focus should really be on what can we do different. And so, if you're up for it, we should probably coordinate another time for us to sit down and say, okay, well, we listed all these things. What can we do different as reliability leaders and asset managers to make a difference? And I'm not one to want to focus on those negative pieces. So let's sit down again and let's have a conversation around, well, what can we do different? What can we bring to the industry to make sure that this doesn't become a systemic issue over the next 30 years.
Yeah, I agree with that. We got to bring solutions.
No, I would love to have you guys back on. And this, this podcast is not about turning young people off of reliability, right? We're here to, promote the good word and kind of hope that people learn some things. And both of you guys are great experts, and, thanks for coming on. The last thing before you go, do you guys have anything to plug? Should people follow you on LinkedIn, or are you going to be at any conferences, anything like that?
Yeah, sure. So certainly you can follow myself on Twitter. It's ReliabilityX. Also, you can see me. I'll be at the SMRP this year giving a presentation with ARMS Reliability, and I'll be at the IMC as well doing a course with asset analytics. And in October, I'll be teaching for the University of Wisconsin, and then again, probably in either March or April.
Yeah, I don't have much coming up. I've decided to take a little bit of a break from doing that, but I am on LinkedIn. And then Joe Reliability X is my Twitter hashtag, if you want to follow me on Twitter.
You can also post questions to Captain Unreliability.
Yeah, that'll be Twitter. Coming up soon. We're going to be launching that very
soon. So we have a Twitter account, and we're hoping to start publishing some articles associated with the negative side of reliability or things that didn't go right.
Yeah, and I'm you can gear more towards really bad advice to make it comedic.
The lighter side of things, right? Yeah, so just kind of giving your horror stories. We want to hear people's horror stories at Captain Unreliability.
Well, I'll give you one now if you have a couple more minutes.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I was at a pulp mill last year, and I was there to do a lubrication audit, and it was Friday morning at like 7 a.m. and I had an hour presentation with the reliability manager and the plant manager. And it was like 2 days before the end of the month. And the reliability manager gets a phone call at like 6:55. And he gets this phone call from the lube specialist. And essentially what was happening was one of the pumps, which was critical to operation, is leaking like a sieve. Like the lube guys are putting a new barrel of oil in there. It was every 2 to 3 hours.
Holy shit.
Yeah, female bearings, really.
And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, well, what's going to happen is they're going to shut it down, they're going to fix it, and then everything will be fine. Well, I was wrong. The plant manager, he needed to hit production targets because the end of the month was Monday. And so it was overtime all Friday night, all Saturday, all Sunday.
Oh, yeah. I've been there.
Wow.
Overtime pumping grease into bearings.
You couldn't like put a basin under the leak and recirculate it.
Have a great old pump that just sucks the grease out of the tub.
That's glorious, though. You should be submitting that to Captain Unreliability.
Yeah, so we'll reveal that it's Captain Dot Unreliability at ReliabilityX.com, right? So where you submit your questions.
You can do it right on Twitter. You can just shoot it on Twitter and copy Captain Unreliability.
Yeah. It's C Unreliability, I think, is the hashtag.
Just email it to me after this and I'll put it in the notes.
For yeah, sure. Awesome. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Perfect. So thanks, guys, for coming on. We'll definitely get you back on to talk about positive things and not just what's wrong with everyone. I'm trying not to turn off everybody.
That sounds great, Rob. I really appreciate that. This was really cool, though, man. No. This was great, man. This was really good and a lot of fun, and we certainly want to continue to contribute to the industry as a whole. So, you know, anytime you want to have us on, shoot out and let us know what the topic is, and we'll be more than happy to sit down with you.
Yep.
Awesome. Have a great night. Everyone who's listening, follow the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, follow George and Joe on Twitter, follow Captain Unreliability, see it in the podcast notes on Twitter, and share your horror stories. George, Joe, thanks for coming on, and see you guys next week.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Rob. Thanks.
Take care.
circling above, over shapes in the sand, looking through an illusion, with the sun shining in my hand, the sun shining in my hand. In the holes in the sky, cosmic embrace, melting into a portrait of size, a portrait of size.